Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Fripp Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rips, I think, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable, I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion, and as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices, like a cacophony of thunder and lightning, and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Time for Counter Speech with Dina Sachs. Dina will guide us through the convoluted corridors of the American legal system, and she will explain how the people can reclaim their country and restore true democracy.
Hey, this is Carl Herman here for Dina. I subbed for her about a month ago, and Dina, as an attorney, is preparing a court case that is happening on Monday, so she asked me to fill in for her today, and I'm happy to do so. I know Dina, as a lawyer, is an expert to be able to talk about the law, and I thought, for today, I would tell you the story of my challenging my public school district for their so-called COVID, so-called health, so-called orders. So that's the story that I'm going to tell today. It's a good story, and I just hope that I do it justice. I have written now a 50-section documentation of what has happened since September 2020. So let us tell this tale. And anything that that I'm telling here today, if you go to Carl B. Herman Blogspot, that's C-A-R-L, B as in Bradley, Herman, H-E-R-M-A-N, .blogspot.com, you can find in the index section or in the table of contents any of these articles of challenging our public school district's obedience to health orders. So, I am a National Board Certified Secondary School Teacher. I'm a National Board Certified Teacher in Social Science, that's Government, History, and Economics. I have a background of helping deliver about 300 policy briefs to members of Congress on ending poverty. I helped grow the Citizens Lobby Results, which works for domestic and foreign policy for ending poverty, for 18 years. And that led to two United Nations summits for heads of state. That's prime ministers, presidents, kings. And this is all about ending poverty, the 19, 1990 World Summit for Children and the 1997 Microcredit Summit. Microcredit is small loans for the poorest of the poor, and the creator of that won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006. So I do have some experience working with the law. I am an experienced AP, Advanced Placement, U.S. Government teacher, as well as macroeconomics. And so let's start this story. And this is my 38th and probably final year as a public high school teacher. I am also credentialed in mathematics. Okay, so I think what I'll do is tell you the whole thing first and then go through the history, which is similar to how I teach history to the most challenging of audiences, captured high school students. So the whole thing is that I basically pointed to the limits of law. The United States is founded upon the guarantee of limited government to defend inalienable rights. Now, that sounds funny to say in our current environment, our Orwellian environment of thinking that we just get permissions and have to be ordered for whatever rhetoric our dictatorial government chooses, and that's all that it is rhetoric. So the foundation of America is inalienable rights, defended by government, not oppressed by government, not removed or attacked by government. So the biggest picture that I can give you to tell this whole thing all at once is that the United States is just a what they teach in school on paper only. In practice, as a professional academic, the best description that I can give for the United States is a rogue state empire. And the documentation for that, I do have one published academic paper via the Claremont Colleges, and that does document war law. So Carl B. Herman Blogspot, if you go to news shows twice a week, I have analysis of current events with Professor Emeritus Jim Fetzer and also a host for Revolution Radio, and as well for with Joe Olson. And any of those shows, read the context section. Everything that I tell you, patriots, ladies and gentlemen, is all I present as objective data that is independently verifiable by anyone who cares to look. I have not had anybody even challenge me regarding the factual accuracy of my claims and would welcome somebody to do so. So anyway, any of the news shows, the big picture is that we have a rogue state empire and the crime center in war, lie started illegal wars of aggression. What we use for money, which is actually its Orwellian opposite, debt. That's why we have an escalating, exponential total debt curve. That's why that exists, because what we use for money is created as a debt, mostly owed back to the two big two failed banks, and two basic reforms, monetary reform, for the government to have the capacity to create what we use for money as a positive number to directly invest in infrastructure. And pretty much every economic cost-benefit analysis that I'm aware of documents as infrastructure investment to the extent that the infrastructure improves economic productivity, you get a triple benefit. You get the upgraded infrastructure. You get falling prices to the extent that the investment returns more economic growth than the cost of the investment, which is the point of investing in infrastructure. And we get the employment all the way up to full employment. And these reforms are never mentioned by corporate media. A part of my published paper is to document how corporate media, which is really five big communication companies, will never publish anything that is challenging to the empire. And it doesn't matter the benefits for we the people, because they're working for the empire. Benjamin Franklin, almost 300 years ago, was so excited about these ideas of monetary reform and public banking. Public banking is where what is done by banks of creating credit is a service provided by government, and therefore the interest payments go back to paying for public goods and services. Ben Franklin wrote a pamphlet describing how Colonial Pennsylvania, when they were the bank, had no need to tax. No need. If, in our world in the present, I helped lobby with Ellen Brown. I know this is a long answer for the big picture, but that's how it goes when you're talking to a history teacher. I'm giving you the context that we live in a rogue state empire, and the components of the empire, the lies started illegal wars of aggression. All this is documented. The bankster looting is just as easily solved. You arrest the criminals for the lies started illegal wars of aggression. That's the big step. While I am absolutely confident in the factual accuracy of everything that I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I have new confidence in how to communicate these facts in such a way that people can hear them, as you may be able to relate. Many patriots are pretty much alone in their families and their organizations, despite the power of the truth. So we have this paradox of being absolutely confident in the facts, yet we need some kind of a breakthrough for these facts to be recognized. And that'll be part of the story of communicating to you these challenges, which are absolutely correct under the law, but they're not hearable. Now, I think that the district is a combination of criminal intent. That would be the prima facie conclusion. Prima facie is a great term to use, and it is academically and legally appropriate. And this is what it means. Prima facie. Prima, first, facie, face. It's from the Latin. It's from the Latin legal background to our legal system. And it means, it's where we get the saying, on its face. So if you have a legal argument, or even an academic argument, you begin by saying, okay, so on its face, this is what I'm looking at. And you're professionally requesting anybody to talk you down, to talk you down. If you've missed any of the relevant facts, to point those out. If any of the alleged facts that you allege are factually inaccurate, to point that out. So that's what we do in professional academics. So I think that the prima facie evidence is that the leadership of the district that I'm referencing to, in so many districts, part of it looks like it's criminal. Because there's no way that you can be mistaken about what you're doing when I so clearly document the law, as this story will get into. And part of it is, I think, with the all of the teachers, and that'll be part of the story and communicating with them, is that so few of them can hear. My own personal conclusion, after 45 years now of civic engagement, beginning with work for ending poverty that led me to create a UC Berkeley major for that topic, is that about 2% of what I talk about can be heard. And you can talk about that. They get 2% of the actual facts, or 2% can hear and 98% can't. So that's like 49 out of every 50 people. They're just not going to be able to respond so far. Hence the paradox of doing everything that we can while surrendering. That we need to have some sort of a breakthrough for these facts to be recognized. So a rogue state empire is what we live in. And our education system supports that rogue state empire. Any of the news shows on my blog, I did also write an 11-part series, an essay series, and all my essays have videos to them as well, And I titled the essay series this, Public Education, Bullshit to Train Stupefied Work Animals. And in that series, I just go through our own textbooks to point out the lies of omission and commission. And these aren't somehow careless errors. This is an intentional construct to cover the rogue state empire in patriotism. And that's what we have corporate news do. That's the education for the adults, and the education for the children is in the public school textbooks. that cover up these crimes. So the leadership of public education, they are complicit in this empire. I did get a graduate degree from Harvard when I was married in 1997. My wife, she said, you know, she got to know me before getting married. And one of the highlights was my civic activism for a brighter future, including projects to improve public education, all of which ended up being shot down at the district level. So she said, eh, go to Harvard. Because I applied. She said, you need more letters behind your name. So I said, should I just go for the top schools? And she says, yeah, go for the top schools. I got into Harvard. They stopped me there from PhD programs. I found the gatekeepers at Harvard. So the education system is definitely captured at the university level to prevent topics that would have any type of a real breakthrough from moving forward. So let's get into this particular tale. Now, this has been 18 months, ladies and gentlemen, of challenges to my school district, which is Hayward Unified School District in Northern California in the East Bay. So Hayward is a community that's close to Berkeley and Oakland in the East Bay. And again, this is my 38th year in public education as a national board certified teacher. That's the highest national standard. I have been honored by two Los Angeles mayors as among the best teachers in Central Los Angeles, a population of about 10,000 teachers. But that's when I was working on those poverty-ending things, and I was inspired, and I thought we could work within the system. But now that I'm even more experienced and capable, I give semester-ending surveys, and the students pretty much it's got to be like 80% say that I'm the best teacher that they have ever had in their subject field. And there's more that I could say about that and do say about that, but I want to tell this particular story. All right. So in September of 2020, we began our school year, and this was called so-called distance learning because our schools closed in March of 2020. Because of concerns for a pandemic. So we began distance learning. And the results were about twice the doubled failure rate. Now, I was paying attention at the beginning when the schools closed. And, you know, people began immediately pointing to the law. And what I found most compelling at the beginning, which I began my initial challenge in September, as I take a sip of water, is that the ability to declare an emergency in the state of California, and this is similar everywhere, is that they're going to have an Emergency Services Act. And in California, this is Government Code 8558, Section B, and they define what an emergency is that would allow a governor to have dictatorial temporary power. And the key phrase for this is in order to declare an emergency, the local resources must be, quote, beyond control, unquote. Now, I was suspicious, of course, and I have documented this type of shenanigans since 2009. I have written about 1,000 public essays that have somewhere around 50 million plus total page views. So I know what I'm looking at when we start getting government overreach, to say it kindly. But anyway, that's the code, 8558B, and there are similar codes in every state that define an emergency. And an emergency, that would make sense. If local resources are beyond their control, then they're going to need some help. And that's an emergency. The definition, the dictionary definition of an emergency is some sort of set of circumstances that require immediate attention. And you got to act right now. And if hospitals are beyond control, then that's an emergency. That said, when the governor declared an emergency based on that definition, we were never provided the comprehensive hospital data to demonstrate beyond control hospitals. And A friend of mine who I play tennis with is a physician, and I leveraged him and all the other people I know who are in the medical field, and all of them said, our hospitals are not beyond control. And I pressed further and found out that hospitals have comprehensive plans for flu seasons, and none of those were even required for COVID. All the individual hospitals were fine and well within their capacity. Corporate media did lie about that, and they continue to lie about it. And they say that emergency rooms are at near capacity. Well, they're designed to be at capacity to maximize the profit of the hospital. You can go to an emergency room anytime, and sometimes you can spend a couple of hours in the emergency room because they're staffed not to pay people to do nothing. So we didn't need those comprehensive hospital plans. We certainly didn't need the military field hospitals or the hospital ships for a real pandemic. So I did notice that. And we began this distance learning for the entire school year of beginning in September 2020. So when we started the school year, I asked them, I said, okay, so in order to work for a school district, we have to take an oath. This is a oath of allegiance to support and defend the constitutions of the state and the federal government. And so in this challenge to the school district, I've always represented that what I'm doing is just, I'm just doing what you hired me to do. I mean, you administered this oath for me to support and defend limited government. So that's what I'm doing here. And I'm just asking questions because what I'm looking at, and again, with that prima facie case, is that there isn't any emergency authority because there isn't any beyond control hospitals. When that is the definition and we're denied that comprehensive data, that's a lie and omission. That means you're taking out something that's crucial, that your story would fall apart. And then what we were told were these problematic so-called positive cases. And that is a problem. That's a lie of commission. Positive cases do not trigger an emergency. Beyond control hospitals trigger an emergency. And with those tests. So if you go to any of the news shows that I have on Carl B. Herman Blogspot, or for this now 50 and growing number of individual essays for the last 18 months challenging my school district, I have something right after the whole history, all 50 of those documented. It's called My Best Shot. This is an essay that I submitted to my teachers in September of 2021, which has the most crucial, important data to demonstrate that this pandemic is replete with fraudulent data and absolute lies. And one of those lies is with these tests. So did you know, if you don't, you're about to know, is that there has been no isolated sample of COVID-19. None. They can't isolate it, point to it, and say that it exists. And this is admitted by the World Health Organization, the CDC, and over 100 different medical research institutes, universities, and again, everything that I'm saying is documented in the article, My Best Shot. So they don't have any example of COVID. The test to measure COVID, of course, can't be designed based on COVID because they don't have them. And they admit that the tests were designed with generic flu samples. And then there's a whole thing with how many cycles do you run this material to be tested to see if there's anything there? And this goes into technical data that is beyond my ability to really understand. I have not had eyes on and hands on this equipment or the academic training to understand this stuff. But from what I read is that if you – and the founder of the PCR test even said that if you run up the number of cycles, you can find anything in any sample. And he said literally anything. The tests become worthless. It's all just going to be false positives. So you have all these – so that's the test. The test is for flu. And did you know that last year the flu disappeared by 99% in the United States? It took a vacation, I guess. Now, again, on its face, what we're looking at is what was tested was flu. And because these cycles for the test were amped up, we had all these people who were asymptomatic because it was a false positive. So the picture that I was looking at going into September of 2020 to challenge my Hayward Unified School District health orders is that, well, first, and this was the first thing that I did in September 2020, is that I have this oath to uphold limited government, and the California Emergency Services Act requires the definition of beyond control hospitals. We've been lied to an omission because we've been denied that data, and we're being lied to in commission by the substitution of these positive tests. Therefore, where is the ordering authority for these health orders? That's what I asked. Now, at the beginning, the district ignored my requests. They just ignored me. They ignored the explanation. They sent a generic email back that said that HUSD employees are required to obey California mandates to protect you. So if I do not agree to these health orders, we were all told that employees would be put on unpaid leave up to a year. Okay, so the district chose not to give me an explanation to my question. And the question is, okay, so we have a limit to emergency ordering authority that is defined as beyond control hospitals. Where's the ordering authority? I was ignored. So I amped up. I emailed our district superintendent, our school board members, my school principal, and some teachers who are on a committee that I'm on. That was the first thing, just to get a broader audience, and the district continued to be silent. So I filed 3 legal complaints, a federal complaint, state complaint, and an employee grievance for district violation of worker safety by issuing a parent dictatorial and illegal policy under threat of employment termination, a $1,000 fine per violation, 1 year in jail. The Alameda County Board of Health, they put this right on the top of these health orders, $1,000 fines for violation, a year imprisonment under California Penal Code Section 69148A1. They put it right out there. So when I filed the grievance, our teachers union, they said, look, here's where we stand with this. We negotiated a contract in good faith for these health orders, and it has a high approval of our union members. Now, that said, we're going to support you getting your questions answered, but don't expect the district to be very enthusiastic to answer your questions. Okay. So this first grievance went through September of 2020, and the district and the union both agreed that it didn't qualify as a grievance because they didn't need to explain it because they were following orders. So this is a first part of it, is that the district is taking the defense, we must follow orders. Now, I don't know about you, but as a history teacher, that rings a bell to me. Just following orders. We teach that in U.S. history classes and U.S. government classes. As again, prima facie, on its face, that's an illegal order. If you're telling us that you have to obey because you're ordered, no. If there are legitimate questions that can be submitted in writing, they need to put in writing an explanation how their orders are lawful. So the district, so at this point, I already know the outcome is that the district will not answer the question because they cannot answer the question because there is no answer to the question of their legal authority without admitting that there isn't any reasonable authority given the limit of beyond control hospital. So the district, they said, all right, so we're counting this as a written complaint. And then I said, okay, so whatever you want to do, I just want my questions answered. And they said, well, okay, appeal to the school board. So I said, all right, I'll appeal to the school board. Just answer my questions. So the school board chose not to answer the questions and made a decision now in December of 2020 saying that everybody just needs to follow orders. Now, for the U.S. Department of Justice, it took them 5 months to get back to me. I had documented everything, and with this public, these public essays, everything that has transpired is public. So the U.S. Department of Justice, they sent back a non-answer and said, and literally in the answer said that this is a new normal, which is, you know, the Department of Justice is of course captured by the empire. So of course they're going to have some sort of generic type of answer for this. The state of California, I filed my complaint with them, with the Department of Fair Employment and Housing, and I got a phone call in December where the rep, field rep, took down all the data and promised a response and never got back to me, and I tried reaching out to them again and just was ignored. So this is all distance learning, so, you know, I didn't have to go to school and deal with any of these the masks or tests, or being told that you need to get vaccinated. I am not vaccinated. So it was all sitting where I am right now on a computer screen, similar to what I'm doing right now, just talking to myself mostly. That school year, again, we did have a doubled student failure rate, which is likely the worst decline in learning productivity for the history of the entire district. And this isn't just Hayward Unified. This was common with the districts, approximately a doubled failure rate. So March 2021, now 3 months away from the end of that school year of distance learning, the superintendent sent an email citing the county deaths. It was a very scary sounding email saying that the county has had 1,300 COVID deaths and 80,000 cases. And he was saying that he was going to have an upcoming survey for our professional responses, and he was grooming our responses to be out of fear. So, you know, I asked questions right away, to, you know, be informed for my voice that he requested. And I asked three things. I said, okay, so how many of our staff and students have actually died of COVID, not tested with, but died of COVID? Because if you're claiming an emergency that we have to shut down the schools, then there's got to be staff and students that have died, right? That's the first question. Second is, so you're pointing to the county overall deaths. What is the current and historical data for that? Because my understanding is that the death rate hasn't gone up at all. Now, it has gone up after the vaccines, but not during this time. And then the third question is, how many staff and students have been injured by these vaccines? Attorney Reiner Fulmich, he is a German attorney, and he's licensed in California as well. He is, along with attorney, U.S. attorney Thomas Renz, R-E-N-Z, and Fulmich is F-U-E-L-L-M-I-C-H. His team has documented that apparently by the batch numbers of the vaccines, about 5% of the vaccines were loaded with substances that turned out to be injurious causing and death causing. So hopefully 95% of those were unloaded and not just waiting to be activated. So I asked these three questions of the superintendent for this survey, and he ignored my emailed questions twice. So then I amplified, and as a chairperson of a PLC, a professional learning committee, And the PLC that I'm the chair of deals with broad educational topics that directly affect our schools, teaching and learning. You know, we're experiencing a doubled failure rate. So, you know, because the superintendent ignored my questions, I shared it with our school's approximately 100 teachers saying, hey, okay, so as chair of this committee, taking a look at these broad educational topics, here's what I asked the superintendent, and he's ignoring me. And I provided the background of, here's the challenges that I've made already. So I began educating our teachers, saying, being able to document and demonstrate that the district is ignoring the definition of an emergency and ignoring direct questions before asking you for a survey that is being prompted by fear. So the superintendent then was, of course, motivated to answer the questions and just repeated the same stuff, is that we have to follow orders. We have to follow orders. That's all that he's saying. But he did say, quote, if you do not agree with the state and county guidelines, or if you believe we are not following them, please pursue your questions and concerns with the appropriate agency. I responded back, you know what? This is your job to explain how your orders are lawful. You keep ignoring that question. But tell you what, you want somebody to contact the appropriate agencies? I will, and I'll get back to you. Ladies and gentlemen, it took me 6 weeks, but I did follow up with the 14 leading California government agencies. 6 weeks. I'll tell you a couple of examples here that I can think of, but all this, again, is documented. So I called up the governor's office. This is Governor Newsom in California. And the person who answered the phone, I said, okay, my name is Carl Herman. I'm calling as a committee chair from Hayward Unified School District, and I'll report back to the district leadership and our school's teachers with whatever it is that you tell me with this. So please be honest and straightforward and document what you say. And I said, so here's our concerns. You know, this beyond control hospital thing. And I looked also, and it appeared at that time that there's a 60-day limit of power. So the governor's office, I said, so could you please explain to me of how the governor's emergency authority is valid without the demonstrated proof of beyond control hospitals? And this guy literally told me, the governor's office can't answer that question for you. I said, but he issued the order. There's got to be an explanation. Can I please talk to a supervisor? And he hung up on me. And that's as far as I got with multiple calls back to the governor's office and no calls back after that. So I called up my two California representatives, my senator, and then my assembly person. And I believe it was the assembly person. And I called up both the senator and the assembly person from where I live and where I work. And let's see, now I don't remember the detail of that, but all of them refused to answer the question. And I documented it. It ended up being, I think, a 35-page report of the documentation. And again, this took 6 weeks, because when somebody doesn't have an answer to your question, they're going to avoid answering. So a lot of what I needed to do was to document the avoidance through calls and through emails. So anyway, I did send, I think I should pause here and state. So at this part of this legal history of this story of challenging my public school district's so-called health, so-called orders, I have demonstrated that the school district, the teachers union, and the California government answers are intentional lies of omission and commission. So when you are ordering something outside of the law, that's no longer limited government. That's unlimited dictatorial government. And again, I'm speaking as a National Board Certified Teacher of these topics. This does not qualify as limited government when you can't demonstrate the limit of the law and that you are within the limit of the law. So I sent this report out. 14 California government agencies. All of it 35 pages. And I sent it to the district leadership, the school board members, the teachers union leadership, our school's teachers. The district's assistant superintendent of human resources immediately responded with threats of disciplinary action. She didn't specify any violation of any policy. And my school principal repeated that. Threats of disciplinary action. So I responded back. I said, so the superintendent said if I thought something was off to check. And I said I would check. And I did check. Here's my report. So what's the violation of policy? What's your problem with anything that I wrote? And please cite what they never did. There are four steps to employment termination in general for this school district. And the first one is to issue a warning. And so the district issued the warning, and they haven't rescinded it. So that's on the book. They've never documented it, but they've never rescinded it. So I have asked the district to at least respond with the intellectual integrity that we teach in California, all of our middle school students. There's a standard saying that in middle school, a social science student in California should be able to, quote, cite specific textual evidence to support analysis of primary and secondary sources. That's all I'm asking the district to do, is to give an explanation and citation for your ordering authority. So at that point of our story, now we're in April 2021, I might have to speed up the telling of the story because I have about 10 minutes to go. I think I will speed it up. So I checked with our teachers union, and the teachers union didn't want to respond. They didn't want to go ahead and get involved, but I wasn't going to go shut up. And I certainly told them that, look, I'm going to have to share this with the teachers if I have silence from you, because no kidding, I'm under oath and I need to speak up about this unlimited government. And we are right in the middle of a doubled student failure rate. So the union responded, and I did get an answer for the district's problem. So they claimed that my report of the 14 leading California government agencies, all avoiding the question of their legal authority, all refusing to demonstrate legal authority, that when I sent that out, it, quote, harasses or disparages, unquote, my colleagues, based on their political beliefs. Of course, I followed up with, you know, you didn't cite anything. Could you please cite what you think is harassing or disparaging about a government report? And they refused. So I followed up with grievances. And all of these grievances go nowhere, by the way. They're all considered by the district as complaints, and that they just go ahead and terminate them. Now, I wasn't as proactive with following up with that response, because I frankly thought that we would get some sort of a breakthrough with the something. But that never happened. So I've continued to have to move forward in good faith. Let's see. So in July of last year, I gave the district an ultimatum of either, you know, if you're saying that I'm under disciplinary actions and you're not citing it, you need to either cite it, withdraw the disciplinary action, or face my attorney. The district refused to do any of that stuff. So I began talking to America's frontline doctors, their connected attorneys, and I'm currently still in communication with three of those legal teams who have sued Los Angeles Unified School District, San Diego Unified School District, and nearby Piedmont Unified School District. And the attorneys saying, okay, they're watching everything. They tell me this is a great case because of the abundant documentation. And they're picking the lawsuits with attorneys who are active in this area and willing to contribute for the good of the population. So they're basically taking the cases that they think have the most power. And they said that my case, they're watching it, and it hasn't rose to the top for them to act, but I am ready, willing, and able as a plaintiff. So we start a new school year in person. And beginning in September of 2021, I did report to my teachers, 100 of these teachers approximately, my best shot to red pill them about dozens of game-changing facts that corporate media never report. And none of the teachers responded. And the two teachers who were on my committee bailed. So the facts were just, and again, while I'm confident in the factual accuracy, I have no confidence in being able to communicate this in such a way that people can embrace it, or at least beyond that 2%. So in September of 2021, the superintendent told me that the my professional learning committee was now censored. No reason given, no citation given. He did say it's not aligned with school or district goals and may not continue. So when I wrote back quoting the reports saying that these policies, these health orders that I'm challenging doubled our student failure rate, the worst decline in district history. How is this not aligned with school and district goals? He refused to answer. In September, the school board voted to 5-0 to mandate full student vaccination. And for those of us who are employees, our choice was to get vaccinated or to face a weekly test that I believe began in October. So again, I kept on challenging this. And in October, I sent another report to the teachers, citing that. So federal law, Title 21, need to get into a little bit of history here. So Title 21 guarantees that anybody is given the option to refuse experimental medical products. This is based upon the history of the Nuremberg Code, which is based upon the reports that especially the Japanese and the German governments conducted horrific medical experiments on people. So the Nuremberg Code and then Title 21, which is also repeated in California Health and Safety Codes in their sections 24171 to 24176, that everyone be given, quote, that anybody, quote, be given the opportunity to decide to consent or not to consent to a medical experiment without the intervention of any element of force, fraud, deceit, duress, coercion, or undue influence on the subject's decision. So I pointed to those laws and Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution that explicitly defines federal law as superior to anything that the state law, state mandate, state orders, state whatever. And I asked the question, where's the ordering authority? I got Title 21 rights to decline any medical, experimental medical procedures, and that includes tests or shots. Where's your force? They refuse to answer that. And I'm not getting any support from the teachers, who I believe, I think we have about 20 of the staff of maybe there's like 130, 140, 150 total staff at school who were unvaccinated. And I found that out because the school principal accidentally didn't put a list for the people who employees required to take a test at our site. He twice didn't put that on the blind CC for the email. He just put it on the open CC. So I was able to know who else wasn't vaccinated and how many of them are there. So district refuses to answer about our Title 21 rights, and that has continued to be the history up to now. I kept on asking our teachers union about, hey, so why is this legal to you? They finally gave me an answer in October, and they said that, okay, so they're not forcing this on us. So I followed up are you saying that the limit of federal law means that we just can't be tackled in the hallway and injected? That's your argument, right? They refused to respond to that clarification. But that's what they said. That's what they're claiming. That as long as it isn't by force, but that is not the letter or intent of having the option without any element of force, fraud, deceit, because if you refuse this stuff, then you get put on unpaid leave. In November, so I'm checking the time here to see how far that we got. Even if I don't finish Carl B. Herman Blogspot, all of this is there in the story. In the summary section at the beginning, I give the whole story here. So in November, my classes were sent to the school principal, sent an urgent email ordering about 200 students and their teachers to the quad, and all unvaccinated students were being sent home. All vaccinated students were returned to class with a pass as long as they felt well. And the problem was is that we had one student test positive. One student tested positive. And anybody in that same indoor space, the unvaccinated, were ordered home. And as a teacher, unvaccinated teacher, I was also ordered home. But I went to the principal and said, hey, so where's this ordering authority? Because the law says is that you have to have a close contact, which is within 6 feet of a positive case, for 15 minutes. He backed down. And I asked him, but you're still sending the students home without any evidence. He says, yes. At that point, students formed a truth club, and because they wanted to get going here. Finally, on December 3rd, I did get a meeting, a Zoom call meeting, to get questions answered from or addressed with the assistant superintendent for HR and our teachers union president. And I asked the assistant superintendent, so where is this authority to send home unvaccinated people without evidence of close contact? And she said, I will get all the appropriate documentation to you. I said, so all the emails I've sent, you haven't looked, but now you're going to look. Now you're going to look. So you just ignored the question before, but now you're going to look and you're going to get back to me. So I accepted that. The district sent a response on the 10th, and they claimed that this, all their orders give us broader rights. And that's why we have to accept them. We have to be tested because of broader rights. We have to be sent home because they're a broader right. And my follow-up saying, this is Orwellian. You are issuing orders that constrict rights. You are forcing one choice of vaccination. When Title 21, the whole intent is to give people freedom without any negative consequences to make their own medical, their own choices regarding medical experiment. They refused to respond to that. Beginning in January, so we had spring break or winter break at that point, as we're getting close to the end of our story time here. And, you know, I told our students, I said, look, if you want some help with this, if they're sending you home, if they're segregating you to separate but equal education without any evidence of a close contact, if you want my help, just ask. So one student or two students did. We met with the principal before school, and the principal had to say to the student's face, I don't know where that authority is. I had to go teach classes, but the student was sent to the assistant principal who didn't know, who called up the school nurse who didn't know, who called up another assistant superintendent who didn't know. But that assistant superintendent said, I'll come to school tomorrow and meet with these students. Assistant superintendent came on a Friday. That was the 7th of January. Spent about an hour trying to talk the two students out of their rights. Two students stood for their rights. Assistant superintendent said, I'm going to call up the county and find out what to do about you, and I'll get back to you no later than Monday, the 10th of January. She didn't, of course. And the resultant emails that I sent in January requesting that information, the district put me on paid administrative leave, claiming they needed to investigate how and why I was asking these questions. Not answer them, but they need to investigate how and why. And that is the current status, or that's about as far as we're going to be able to get today. I'll just wrap this up. So my experience in these 18 months is that these people, they can run, but they can't hide. All they have is BS to try to cover, prima facie, illegal health orders, and that these cases that go to court are going to be our best chance. Now, that said, you have to understand that the court system is also as compromised as any of the other government systems. The legislative branch, the executive branch, the judicial branch is also captured. And yet, as somebody who has studied Dr. King, and where Dr. King really studied was Gandhi, our power is just going to be with the truth. So, in closing, patriots, I appreciate everything that you do for thinking, speaking, and taking action. It is a type of acting. We're all acting for one thing or another. But I appreciate everything that you're doing. Stand strong. And I do conclude as well that we do need some type of a breakthrough. That, okay, it's a paradox. Anything in academics, you get a paradox, which is an apparent contradiction. But it's true. You got to do everything that you can see for this. And at the same time, total surrender that we're just small pieces on a big, big playing board. Well, I'm just waiting for the music now to interrupt me, to show me that our time is done. Unless I want to quote one other thing here. I'll take a look here. If this is of interest to you, please do Carl B. Herman Blogspot again. Take a look. I've completely documented this case of challenging our public school system. And twice a week news shows for the bigger picture. Thanks so much. God bless you.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
The pill has been taken. The blinders are off. Are we in the end game? Or are we simply living a replay of a time that's already happened, with no choices? Different people have different points of view. When it comes to creation versus evolution, my point of view, we were created to evolve. The Red Pill. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern in Studio B. www.freedomslips.com and revolution.radio. Check it out.